double quote.
I know. It was, it, you know, the grandpa, Jay, is going on a pad or something. He's like, double click. I'm double clicking. And he's like, no, double click. double click.
I've only seen that my place I get my hair cut. He will put that on sometimes. It's kind of hilarious.
Well, the man, the myth, the legend.
I watched a lot when the kids were younger. They liked it.
With 30 seconds to spare.
All right, it is 6 p.m. We will call the Human Services Committee meeting to order. We had everyone fill out the attendance. Looks like all supervisors are present except for Supervisor Stocker. We will update if he shows up. Are there any citizens' comments? Any citizens wishing to speak? Please come up to the table and share your thoughts with us, please.
Absolutely.
This is your chance.
Hi.
Please state your name and address.
Sure. My name is Michelle Sandberg. Office address is 6103 39th Avenue, Kenosha. I am the executive director of the Hope Council on Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse. The mission of the Hope Council is to reduce the impact of substance use disorders on our community by providing education, prevention, intervention, and referral services. Since 1969, education, prevention, and outreach surrounding substance use disorders is the heart of what we do at the Hope Council. We don't do treatment, so prevention education is our total focus. We work closely with the health department because they're the arm of the county most often right now engaged in prevention efforts. The health department has 7 public health strategists right now, 7-ish, I believe, working on various programs throughout the county. The health department also has 10 public health nurses contracted and stationed in the schools. The nurses administer the family life education programs and they provide all of the support to the schools. When I first heard about the prevention specialist position during the Kenosha County Substance Abuse Coalition call, I was intrigued and I thought that because of the work we do at the Hope Council, this could be a natural fit and an ideal home for that position. The Hope Council was awarded the KRW Tobacco-Free Coalition contract from the state of Wisconsin in 2018, and we've worked very closely with both public and private schools in the Tri-County region since then. 2019 to 2020, the school year just before COVID shut everything down, we had done presentations that year for 4,500 students, parents, and educators during the school year. We were welcomed and we received positive feedback from the administrators for our ability to customize the programs and provide accurate, up-to-date education surrounding tobacco and nicotine products. The KRW Tobacco-Free Coalition, and KRW is Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth County. Tobacco-Free Coalition is supported by one full-time employee and has the support of the entire staff of the Hope Council. The Hope Council also provides companion services and partners with the KRW, since KRW is required to educate and provide information on nicotine only. The Hope Council usually partners up with them for those presentations and then offers information about other drugs. It's timely, it's relevant, and it's important that youth receive all of the information, not just little pieces of it. It's difficult to find prevention money, quite honestly. Most money is directed towards treatment efforts, tangible things that you can see and touch and feel and count. Prevention is impossible to measure. You cannot measure something that didn't happen. So it's hard to quantify the work that we do at times. The Hope Council has a robust tobacco-focused prevention program in place, and it's adding a funded position that could focus on opioids or any other prevention efforts would be a huge benefit to the youth in our community. As a bonus, if this position was housed at a nonprofit, it would cost less. It's not just, it's just the reality of our world right now that a nonprofit can do what a government agency can and can't do, and we can do it cheaper, and we can start right now. This position currently, the prevention and education specialist position that's being discussed tonight, is requesting one full-time employee with an E8 pay grade. And I found this kind of surprising since an E8 is a manager level. For example, behavioral health is led by an E10 on their organizational chart, and then the three positions below them are all E7/8 according to the budget this year. So this requisition is asking for another E8 pay grade at a cost of $120,000 annually. I had requested the job description, but it's not available to anybody yet. So I had to do a little bit of guessing, and I ran some numbers, and based on my knowledge and experience, I would assume that a reasonable starting salary for a position like this could be between $55,000 and $65,000. The Hope Council is one of very few nonprofits in the area that does offer health insurance and a 401k with a match. So for us to house this position, it could reasonably be expected to cost for salaries between $79,000 and $84,000. Again, I'm just guessing based on, I don't have a full job description to look at it. Allowing this role to go to a nonprofit focused solely on this type of work would put $35,000 to $40,000 back into that program to help offset some of the program costs, which aren't in this request. I know this is going to ruffle some feathers tonight, my being here, but I think that the Hope Council should be considered for a position like this, and I don't know of any opportunity to have this discussion or who to have it with, so this was my best shot at letting you know what we do, what we're able to offer, and hope for consideration for a position like this potentially, or in the future if additional funding is able to be used for prevention efforts. Right now, we do not receive a penny for any of the prevention work that we do from the county or from the city. So all of the work that we do is funded by either small grants that we write independently or proceeds from other donors. So if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
We'll have to hold that for citizens' comments, but thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it. Any other citizens' comments? Any other citizens wishing to speak? Last call for citizen comments. Seeing none, citizen comments are closed. For my comments, just like to welcome you all to my first chairing the Human Services Committee. I'm excited to continue the work that we've done together with Supervisor Nadewski chairing it previously. As before, any agenda items that you guys wish to have considered, please email those to me. I will talk with Director Jansen and work on getting those presentations. We had a lot of great ideas last couple of meetings, so I hope to build on that and hopefully build some exciting agenda items coming forward that will educate us and then just help us with the oversight of our health department here at the county. So with that, are there any supervisor comments? Yes, Supervisor Uhas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since we have a new youth and governance member, if we could just go around the table and introduce ourselves to Madison, that
sure,
would be great.
I'm Zach Stock, District 11. I'm the Chair of the Human Services.
My name is Dave Gertson, District 15, which is most of the village of Summers and all of the town of Summers. And I share the village of Summers with Supervisor Bashaw.
And I'm Monica Uhas. I am your youth and governance mentor, and I am District 17. I serve the west side of 39th Avenue, going to the boundaries of Pleasant Prairie on the west end.
Ed Kavicki, County Board Supervisor, District 6. Kenosha's near north side, Washington Road, 22nd Avenue, east to the tracks, north to Carthage College, and 18th Street primarily. Welcome aboard.
Supervisor Jeff Gantz, District 3.
I'm Kathy Duberston. I email you all the stuff.
All of your homework.
I have no district. I live in Racine.
I email you all the stuff.
And she's the best. I'm a Supervisor Nedweski, Amanda. I serve the southeast Pleasant Prairie area, east of 39th Avenue, pretty much south of 91st Street, following kind of the Pleasant Prairie municipal boundary, kind of reaches up into Kenosha, like by Harrison Road, Forest Park area a little bit. I'm also a state legislature. I'm in the state assembly serving District 61, so I have two roles, and sometimes you'll hear me talk about both of those. And your name is Madison?
Madison or Maddie.
Or Maddie, you go by Maddie. Okay, and what school are you from?
Lakeview.
Excellent, we're so glad to help you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other supervisor comments?
We didn't hear from Maddie, so.
Oh, yes, please introduce yourself.
Maddie.
I live in District 13. I'm a rising senior at Lakeview Technology.
Thank you for coming, participating in the program. Love seeing you guys here, and feel free to ask questions. You know, if you have a question, need us to clarify anything, please just raise your hand. We'll call on you and definitely help you with that. Yes, Supervisor Nowoski.
I just wanted to welcome Supervisor Stock into his new role as Chair of Human Services. I enjoyed it very much. I'm looking forward to diving into fiscal stuff, mostly contracts, in the second half of my term. I also wanted to offer an update on, at one point we passed a resolution in this committee on asking the state to increase the child support funding statewide by $5 million per year in the coming biennium. I did submit that budget motion today. No promises from there, but my budget buddy in the legislature is the joint chair of the Joint Finance Committee, and he said, go ahead and put it through, and you know, we'll see what we can get done. So I look forward to giving an update at the next meeting on that.
All right, any other committee member comments? Any other supervisor comments? All right, comments are youth and governments. Any additional comments? All right. Comments are closed. All right, now we're going to move to approval of the minutes. We have three different months, so we'll start with February. There is a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Gearson, second by Supervisor Nedweski. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, minutes pass.
Well, youth and governance.
Oh, youth and governance. How do you vote?
Aye.
All right, minutes are approved. Now we move on to April minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Youth and governance?
Aye.
All right, the minutes for April are approved. And for May?
Is there a motion to approve.
Supervisor Juhas, second by Supervisor Kubicki. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Youth and governance?
Aye.
All right, the minutes from May are approved. We're going to move on to number five, resolution for the appointment of Veronica King to serve on the Commission on Aging and Disability Services.
Hello, everyone. So we really look forward to having Ms. King on our commission. She has a lot of experience. She's had a lot of roles in the community related to social services and social work. And I think her experience and her many years of knowledge in our community would make her a great asset for our Commission on Aging and Disability. So I look forward to a positive vote. Ms. King is here, so if anyone has additional questions, I'm sure she'd be happy to answer them.
Yeah, Ms. King, if you'd like to say a few words, feel free to step up.
I've been around about as long as Mr. Jansen.
Whoa. Say no more.
Motion to approve.
Wow. Back the bus up, John.
This is John right now.
Through the years, I've worked with various populations, juveniles, adults, male, female, offenders, individuals with substance use disorders, individuals with disabilities, the whole gamut. I'm licensed as a social worker. I've been licensed in Wisconsin now for about 28 years. I'm also licensed as a clinical substance abuse counselor, and I'm licensed as an independent clinical supervisor. And I currently work for Ascension Healthcare as a lead licensed behavioral health counselor and clinical supervisor. And so I currently supervise our addiction staff and student interns from Marquette University, El Verno, Mount Mary University, and UW-Milwaukee, both their social work and their counseling division. So I'm showing students the works so that they can return to their communities and do some good work.
Awesome. And I did hear a motion to approve.
Move to approve.
By Supervisor Gentz and a second by Supervisor Kubicki. Any discussion? Supervisor Nowoski.
Can I continue to ask questions?
Oh, please, yes.
So I just wanted to know, what inspired you to put your application in for this particular commission, and what do you hope to bring to the table on aging and disability?
Well, I hope to bring to this position years of experience in working as a social worker, knowing the Kenosha community, working with the addiction population, working with the offender population, individuals with disabilities, your senior population. So I'm hoping to bring well-rounded experience to the commission and help in any way that I can.
Well, I think I could probably safely speak on behalf of all of us. Thanks for all that you have done for our community up until this point and continue to do.
Thank you.
All right, any other supervisors?
I just simply say thank you for the honest service.
All right. I see you're here. You're from District 11, so
yes.
Thank you for applying as well. Pleasure to meet you. Youth and Governance, any questions or comments? All right. So we'll go ahead and we have move in second. So all in favor of the appointment of Ms. Veronica King to serve on the Kenosha County Commission on Aging and Disability Services, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. This is approved. I will pass this around.
You forgot me.
Oh, and Youth and Governance.
Aye.
I'm going to get better. All right, moving on to number six, the resolution for the appointment of Dustin Feeney to the position of Director of Workforce Development. We got two people jumping up wanting to present this one. Wow.
Good evening.
Somebody's excited.
Clara Tappa, Director of Human Resources. You have both John Jansen and myself here bringing forward this resolution seeking approval of the appointment of Dustin Feeney to the Director of Workforce Development role. Dustin is here to share with you if you have any questions for him. He's been with the county since 1998. He's worked in various roles. He started as a direct supervision officer and then went into human services in workforce development. He would be succeeding Nina Taylor at a salary of $92,000.
All right. Are there any questions for Mr. Feeney, if you'd like to introduce yourself?
So, you know, I was actually thinking about this, and like in 2 weeks, I'll have 25 years, which is not as much as John or Ron. it's interesting. It comes full circle. You know, I worked at the Sheriff's Department, and I was a caseworker in child support for 10 years. At one point, I collected the most amount of lump sum money that we did as an agency, at $52,000. Then I worked for economic support for 2 years, so both of those are within the Division of Workforce Development. Then I went back to child support in 2012 as a supervisor of paternity, court order establishment, review and adjust, and UIFSA. And we had this really great supervisor, Darlene Sandberg, who retired in 2012. And she set up this thing called the Border Project for Illinois, because you know, one thing we learned as a caseworker that you send a case in child support to Illinois, black hole, it's gone. You're never going to hear anything ever again. But she established all these partnerships with high management in, you know, for the state of Illinois. And Wisconsin is state administered, but county operated in child support, and Illinois is state administered, state operated. So they're all state employees, so they're regionalized. And she got us the Illinois system where we can look things up in the Illinois system. To this day, we still have it by a shoestring. But we still have it. They cut Indiana off like a decade ago. So, you know, I had two border conferences, one at the County Center and then one at the Civil War Museum, where we had like 85 people from 8 different states and the Office of Child Support Enforcement in Region 5, Chicago. So just some great networking that we would do. I maintained a list of 850 child support professionals from 45 states and four foreign countries. I'm not sure if that is relevant anymore now that we have so much modernization and communication center and that intergovernmental reference guide, but you know, it certainly helped Kenosha get what it needed, especially being a border county right with Illinois. So one of the other things that we brought we were county of the year 2 years for Wisconsin Child Support Enforcement Association, 2002 and 2013. I was there both times. So then I joined the Wisconsin Child Support Enforcement Association in 2019, and became a director for 4 years. And unbeknownst to that I was going to get this opening, I became the president of the Wisconsin Child Support Enforcement Association this year. So I got the job, and I thought, oh, shoot, okay. Well, and I, you know, John said I can maintain, you know, I'm still working in child support and economic support, and I can maintain that presidency. So, you know, that's to help educate child support professionals throughout Wisconsin and to help promote our policies and, you know, for really the passion of helping children and families. So, I don't know, I think I'm rambling, so I think I'll leave it right there. And if you guys have any questions, feel free to ask.
Supervisor Kubicki.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Kubicki, second by Supervisor Wolski.
Thank you for assuring me that you'll stay as long as Mr. Jansen. Just a joke there.
Supervisor Gantz.
What did you say the pay would be?
$92,000.
Where does that fit in the spectrum? On July 2nd? If he's starting currently at E10 and it's going to be E12?
Actually, that salary is within the new pay grade, so there would not be an increase on July 2nd.
And what does the E start at? If we're going E10, E12, is it start at E6, E7? What does it start at? I mean,
the exempt scales? Well, yeah. At yeah. E1.
Okay. And how high does it go?
To E16.
So we're making him an E10, 12. How does that fit with our compensation study? I mean, is that
comparable?
How does?
I didn't mean to speak for it. Sorry.
No, it came out perfectly, right in the right time, like I said. But I, you know, I've seen lately a number of people come in and at the top end. And I'm curious to see,
sure.
And not that you're not qualified, or I mean, I'm talking around your back when you're right in front of you. But
no,
you
so
know.
The E10 pay grade, which is what mm-hmm. until July 2nd, that ranges from $77,346 and tops out at $107,510. The E12 range is $88,810 to
$122,643. And in the compensation study, where would this have fallen, this type of supervisory or this type of this position, where did it fall before? I mean, as comparable with other areas. I mean,
so in E10 currently, there are other director roles.
Okay.
So director of land information, children and family services, aging, okay. Disability, behavioral health.
Okay. I just want to know, because
sure.
I'm not gonna support, you know, unless we need to, throwing the top level at people to get them to work here. So if we need to do what we need to do, and he's very qualified, I'm fine with that. But I just had to ask that question. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Supervisor Nadeski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to say Mr. Feeney has been a wealth of knowledge and resource, always willing to answer my questions, to provide us with education, has been here a number of times to give us background on how things work. He's so very well informed, has also been an asset to me at the state level, and I'm very proud to support this appointment.
All right, any other supervisor comments or questions? All right, seeing none, we have any other supervisor in the room? All right, seeing none, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Youth and Governance, how do you vote?
Aye.
All right.
Congratulations.
This is approved. I will sign this and pass it down. Let the record show that Supervisor Stocker is present.
Apparently I didn't read my stuff very well.
All right. All right, we are going to move on to number 7, resolution to modify the Division of Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health Services 2023 budget for a grant, the Independent Living Suppliers Supports Pilot.
So, I don't think I introduced myself before. I'm Rebecca Dutter. I'm the Director of Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health. So, very rarely do I get to come to this committee with a project or a new pilot program that can change so many of the lives of the people that we serve. So this Independent Living Support Pilot Grant, which we have been elected as a county to participate in, we are one of 13 counties that received this grant. This is being funded as a pilot by the state of Wisconsin through their ARPA funds. So there is an end to this program unless the program is, the pilot is successful, and then hopefully they'll be able to find some additional funds. But the goal of this pilot is to meet the needs of the people who don't fit into our managed care long-term care programs, so those Medicaid waiver programs. So it's for folks that continue to have the need, but may not, maybe just a little bit more above the range of income that some of our folks that fall into that MA category. Historically, we monitor in the Aging and Disability Resource Center unmet needs. And most of the unmet needs that we monitor are for people who make too much to be in the programs, but not enough to really be home successful with all of the services that they need. So this pilot program is a program in which we are eligible to enroll 500 of our community members. It is for those over the age of 60. If they have a qualifying disability, they can be enrolled under the age of 60. They have to be a Kenosha County resident. They have to need assistance with one or more activity of daily living. So bathing, dressing, transportation, financial management. It's a pretty open list of areas that they can need assistance with. And they also have to be below 300% of the federal poverty level. It's also the only program that I have ever known in existence that we take a person's income by a person and not by a married couple. So if one needs assistance, they can qualify on their own without the other one. And in our long-term care programs, the married couple's income and assets are counted as one. So oftentimes people are not able to be qualified simply because the partner together, they have more income and assets. They also cannot be in any long-term care facility. So the purpose of this grant is to keep people at home with the most minimum amount of services to meet the need to keep them as independent as possible. So folks that are enrolled in this program will have up to 12 months to spend $7,200 on the care that they need for themselves. And it's very wide open what that care could be. So it can be anything from home care. It could be putting ramps on homes, which if anyone has ever looked at what it takes to put a ramp on the home, not only is it expensive, but it is not covered under any program. So this is a huge unmet need for our community. It also can make a vehicle adapted. So if we have younger folks or even older folks that have a vehicle that could use to be adapted, whether it's because they don't have the use of their legs or we need to put a wheelchair lift into a vehicle, it can be adapted to do that. It could be used for if somebody needs financial management because they've gotten themselves into some debt to help them get through that. So it's a pretty wide open grant. We are hoping to be able to have two full-time staff administer this grant. Again, the enrollment period is 9 months, so we've got 500 people to enroll in 9 months, so it's gonna be kind of an all hands on deck, let's get everybody that we can enrolled in this program. And then from the date of enrollment, they have 12 months to spend the $7,200. It's again, I've been in this not as long as John, sorry to say, but I've been around for a while, and it's one of the best programs that I've ever seen come our way that really provides, I think, what is going to be a great benefit for people who struggle in the community, but can be helped to be allowed to be as independent as they possibly can. So we will be working with a fiscal agent through the state. The fiscal agent will approve all of the expenses. So again, that's not something that the county's case managers that will run this program will be enrolled in. They will be setting up the care plan and then working with the vendors to be able to submit those bills to the fiscal agent, who will then provide that payment back to the whomever is the person providing the service. Family members can be hired in the service. However, there are some limitations and there's some they have to pass background checks and all of the other things you would have to do when you're an employee. But again, I also think that's a unique benefit because we have a lot of folks that, you know, they don't want someone else in their home, and this will provide the opportunity to let them have somebody trusted in their home if they have somebody that can fit that description. Yes.
Supervisor Kabiggy.
Forgive me if I ask a question, but these are two individuals that are going to be administering and distributing these funds to these individuals that you mentioned. Who is paying their salary? Is that coming out of the funding or our funding, or where is that coming?
Nope. So we receive the $432 will go to the 20 months of the grant for us to administer the program. The 72.
$2,000.
What did I say?
$432.
Oh. $432. No, we're not going
we're not
very far.
Because if you're talking, you know,
right,
bullion or something, right. You caught it too. Yeah. Okay. So
the 79.
I am listening to what you said.
You got it. So, the $7,900 or the $7,200 is actually not part of our grant. That's actually paid through this fiscal agent that will be providing the service. So that our cost of that $432,000 is just the 20 months of us running the grant. And it's the way they based that was they took 500 people of our enrollees and they assigned a dollar figure to it, and that's how they came up with the budget for it.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Supervisor Gentz.
I was going to ask the same question, but to piggyback on that, we're going to use two of our current employees to do this.
No, we don't have the.
We're going to hire two.
We're going to contract with an agency.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and obviously this contract will be just through how long we have the grants.
Correct.
So
correct.
We won't have anything lingering. No. Okay, thank you.
No, and one of the roles of the case managers is to start actually doing discharge planning with the people the minute that they actually put the care plan together, so that we're not leaving anyone in a lurch. You know, it'll be. Can we enroll them in a Medicaid program? Do they need to go somewhere else? I mean, what can we do from the day one? Because, you know, we don't want to start a service and then take it away from someone. So that discharge planning is an integral part of what the case managers will be doing.
Thank you.
Sure.
Supervisor Nodweski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rebecca, you mentioned that the single income can be considered separately, even if it's a married couple or a couple living together.
Correct.
Why is that?
Just the way the state set up this grant. I think it was to foster and to encourage people who don't want to go into the long-term care programs because of the spend down or the divestment that occurs, especially when you have a married couple.
I guess, you know, the other side of it is you could have somebody with significant income and have a spouse yep. that hasn't been working for a long time still qualify, and you could have a person in the community who really needs that, and really technically that household has the funds. I mean, where do we fall on that?
Well, the state does not let us make any qualifications as far as how we enroll folks. So
they just have to meet the criteria.
It's basically a first come, first serve. I will tell you that we will certainly go through some of the waiting lists that we have some for some of our respite programs and some of the other caregiver needs that we know that are out there. Those will obviously be the first folks that we will want to try to get enrolled in this program because they've been identified and waiting for services for a long time. But other than that, we're not allowed to do any type of categorization as far as your need level is higher than
okay.
this individual.
So there's no need base, it's just first come, first serve.
No. Can I ask and it's not asset based, which is another interesting
yeah,
thing
right.
for the state to do.
Indeed. Well, we know about that too. And also you said family members could be hired into this service. What are you said under certain conditions,
right.
you know, they would have to meet certain criteria. What might be some examples?
Examples of what a family member could do or
yeah.
example of what a family member could do?
Right.
Okay, so, you know, if a family member was providing respite, if a family member was providing personal cares, if a family member was providing transportation or grocery shopping or any of the above, I think would fall into that category. Now, again, the care plan has to be approved by this fiscal agent, and the person has to go through the state of Wisconsin's caregiver background check to make sure that they have not, been licensed and have lost their license. And then they will set the wage with the individual. So it will have to be, they'll do a, whatever the service is, they'll do a a grouping of what the service is costing in this area of our state, and then they'll give them a wage.
Okay,
based
so there'll be
that.
Some wage-based
Absolutely.
Input. Okay,
yep.
Not like you get $100 an hour to
no.
drive me to the grocery store. What about if it was somebody putting in a ramp, like you suggested,
right.
and you know, would that person have to sort of be a licensed professional who is, or I'm concerned about like safety code
right.
for a ramp.
Right.
Is it your brother-in-law putting in a ramp, or you know, on his weekend, or is it a contractor?
Right. So for a permanent ramp, it would have to be a contractor. For a portable ramp, which is already has the pitch that is necessary, that I think could be installed by anybody. Now, whether or not they will pay that, I think that's going to be, at the time we work on the case plan, that will be something to be discussed with the fiscal agent. My guess is we would need to have a licensed person to be able to do that, because you want to make sure that it's safe.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Supervisor Gentz? Oh, I'm sorry. My bad. Supervisor Kirsten.
Get the G right.
So, this looks like a really good grant. What's the primary program? You know, I've done lots of caregiving, and some people I've helped fill out different documents, and they go through the county, and a social worker will come out and mm-hmm. say, this person doesn't qualify because of assets or income, or the family member cannot get reimbursed for the caregiving, and that's the typical thing I've seen. So this seems like it really fills the gap there. But the program that we, what's the number one program we provide that, but for income, these 500 people might qualify?
Most of the time, these 500 people would not qualify for any program. They're going to be ineligible simply because of their income.
But for the income.
If for the income, they would probably be enrolled in one of our long-term care state programs, which is the family care benefit.
All right. So the family care benefit, what does that do? What's the dollar amount?
There is no dollar amount attached to the family care benefit. It's intended to be what that individual needs. Now, the managed care organizations that run family care get a stipend per person, and that is different based on the individual programs, but there's no low or high for the family care program.
So family care, they will go get some help in, you know, whatever it is. You mentioned a dozen things, but there's a whole bunch of things. So, and does that flow through, I'm trying to remember, does that flow through the county or through the state?
No, it flows through the state. Right, it flows through the state. We do, at the county level, we do the enrollment into the program.
That's
at
the enrollment.
Right.
You do the enrollment right. through ADRC?
Correct.
And then ADRC then gets the person enrolled in the system.
Right.
And then all the claims then flow through the state.
Correct.
And the reimbursements come back from the state.
Correct.
And now, will that same system be used to qualify these people, or will be doing it all in-house or contracting it out? Or
it's pretty much the same system in that we will do the enrollment. The difference is we'll be doing the setup of the care plan, so we're not turning this over to a different managed care organization to do that part of the work. The staff members will be doing that, but the reimbursement factor for the services will be billed through this fiscal agent that the state has hired.
Thank you, Rebecca. Sure. That answers my question, so I yield.
Thank you. Supervisor Juhas is next.
Oh, Rebecca, I know you mentioned that you would be looking at people who are on a list for respite care. Mm-hmm. Besides that, how else are you going to get out in the community to get the word out that there's this program available?
The state actually has done a lot of work for us. They have actually put together an entire marketing campaign, but they are not allowing us to release that until mid-June, because this program officially kicks off July 10th. They don't want to start advertising too soon because they believe that we will probably end up with way more people interested than the 500 slots we currently have.
And does the state typically put together a marketing program?
No.
Interesting.
No, I have never really seen this.
Okay.
It's fascinating. I mean, the intent is great. We've never had a program like this. These are the hardest people to serve because they're people you have to say no to. You know, mm-hmm. you don't have enough, but you have too much. And they oftentimes, you know, don't get the services and support that they need until something catastrophic happens. And that's just so unfortunate that, you know, hopefully by putting in a little bit of dollars and a little bit of work, we can prevent them from needing to leave their home, which is what I think everybody wants.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Supervisor Stockler.
I wish there was an income limit on here. That would be, you know.
Well, really well, nice. There is. It's 300% of the federal poverty level, which is 42,000 some change for this year.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, that's okay.
But I do like that they're allowing couples to remain in the home instead of encourage them to get divorced or separate to get these benefits. I think that's a very good step in the right direction.
All right, is that all?
Yes.
All right, I'll pass the virtual gavel over to you for a second. I do have a couple questions. What does that reimbursement process look like? Do they say they need a ramp? Do they get the quote from the ramp contractor, submit it to the state, they approve it, and then does the state pay the contractor, or does it flow through the individual?
Doesn't flow through us. The role of the case manager will be to help the client get those quotes. We have a pretty robust resource directory that we've been publishing for years. A lot of the people who are in this list are people that we would turn to because they're pretty trusted with us. And then we'll be searching for some outside services that we've never really had the pleasure of working with. So I've never been allowed to adapt a vehicle for someone. So we're going to be certainly, you know, working with some new vendors. But the quotes that we receive will go directly to the fiscal agent, and then the fiscal agent will determine which one is appropriate, and the payment will go right from the fiscal agent to the supplier.
And would there be, I think that was asked earlier, but any extraordinary requirements on that, you know, that the state is looking for from that contractor?
No, they do for like the adapting of the vehicles, they do have to be licensed for that. I mean, it has to be a mechanic.
Just simple licensing.
Right, because that's a lot of work that goes into that one.
Okay, what is our current waiting list? Do you have a ballpark? Is it close to 500 already? Is it less?
Well, most of our programs do not have waiting lists, with the exception of the National Family Caregiver Support Program, which is called NFCSP, and the Alzheimer's Family Caregiver Support Program, which is called AFCSP. Those two have a tendency to have waiting lists because the qualifications for them to be enrolled are typically not as stringent as they are for our long-term care people. So for our managed care program, our family care program, there can't be a waiting list. The state has said that it's open enrollment, so anyone who qualifies is able to get in there. It's this group of people, and it's typically people who have the beginning stages or middle stages of dementia, where family members are caring for them in the home, are the people that fall into these two pots of money that we at times have waiting lists on.
Okay, and is this like an online application? Do they have to call your office directly to get to qualify for these?
So the application process will go through the caseworker. So the caseworker will meet after the referral is made to our office. The caseworker will meet with them, we would prefer to do it in their home so we can observe what's happening in the home. But if they prefer to do it virtually or on the telephone, we can do it that way as well.
Okay. And what agency are you looking at?
Professional Services Group.
Okay.
PSG.
PFS. Okay. Is there anything specifically excluded from this grant?
Well, outside of the fact that they can't be in a facility or in a long-term care program already, those are the only things that I think I do understand the purpose of that. If they're already in a facility, they're getting their needs met, and if they're in a long-term care program, they should be getting their needs met as well. But those are the only exceptions, outside of people who potentially are not Kenosha County residents or don't meet that 300% of the federal poverty level.
All right, thank you. I will yield, and then do we have a motion to approve?
Move.
Second.
Motion by Supervisor Nadolski, second by Supervisor Stocker. Let me hold quick. Any further questions from supervisors, youth and governance? Okay. So all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right.
Thank
Resolution
you.
Passes.
Youth and governance.
And youth and governance.
Aye.
Aye. I thought it was getting better.
Good. It takes practice.
Yeah. We'll get there. There you go. All right, now coming up on number 8, resolution to modify the Division of Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health Services 2023 budget for a new position, Community Prevention and Education Specialist.
Good evening, Chairman, Supervisors, Youth and Governance. It's Carrie Foss. I'm the Behavioral Health Manager at the Division of Aging, Disability, and Behavioral Health. I'll help out Director Jansen here. In my 27 years of working in community mental health here in Kenosha, I am excited to, much like how Rebecca had shared, we have this really unique opportunity. Last fall, our division was approached by an SRO, a student or a school resource officer, saying our school is in desperate need of support because of the substance abuse and mental health challenges of our school. We heard that that high school's incoming freshmen had more behavioral health needs than the rest of the school combined. The SRO reached out and said, could you speak with our administration? We need support, we need services, we need help, anything you can do. So we started working with that administration, provided a lot of structure and how to have conversations with students, how to normalize conversation, and most importantly, how to protect themselves when they hear some tragedy within a friend group. What it is to be a peer and not a problem solver in the high school. And so that was a really powerful experience for that high school. And there was a lot of great feedback. And then come to the opioid settlement dollars and having this very unique opportunity to spend money to save lives. This is very unique, something that I have never been able to access or an opportunity to use. And so when we can take a look at prevention, and you heard in citizens' comments, these opportunities don't come around often. So when the opioid settlement panel came to its first meeting in January, the administration from that school presented and expressed again the concern to the panel of we really need help. And so that's why this was born, is the position for education and outreach. The main goal here is to not only work within the schools, but for the position to constantly be looking for grants and opportunities to expand and supplement that program. Looking for the natural connections that we have in our business communities with our law enforcement, with our existing behavioral health providers. And so the uniqueness of that position is not to only find the curriculum that can be used, and we've talked at other meetings about this, and we've talked about potentially looking at the Bachman Life Skills, which is nationally proven to not only reduce drug abuse, but also violence and delinquency in our youth. And there's a multiple tiers available. You can start with high schools in grade 11 and 12, preparing students to that transition to adulthood. You can add high school level, grades 9 and 10. You could also go to the middle school, which is a very intense level. And given the fact that we heard information from one of our high schools about the state of the incoming freshmen, I'm really encouraged to think about what we could offer in our middle schools. We currently have DARE in our elementary school. There's been a lot of conversation with our sheriff's department, our DARE officer, and all of our SROs on how do we enhance that education that's already received at the elementary school, and how do we pull that up to the middle school, how do we pull that up into the high school level. When you look at curriculum such as Bachman, there's also a parental guide. So there's an ability to do this curriculum not only within the schools, it could be after school, it could be outside of school, and the beauty of that is that there's a piece that you could really start and do education with parents, which is really that hook to make this a really powerful experience.
Are there any questions from supervisors? Supervisor Gens.
We heard in citizens' comments an approximate salary. Are we looking at a salary and a job description with approving this position right now?
I think we're looking at an E8, Clara.
Yep, an E8 between the salary range of 68 to 95.
Supervisor Nedvosky.
What is the intention for that to be a county employee, or is there an opportunity to outsource that through the Hope Council? Or
currently the intention is this to be a county position, to be part of the larger behavioral health portion of the Division of Aging and Disability Behavioral Health. A lot of rationale would go into that is being able to continue the partnership that we have with public health, continue to the partnership that we have with the opioid task force and with all of the relationships we have with our local law enforcement, considering the work we already do regarding Chapter 51 and crisis intervention. So that idea is to put that within the infrastructure of county behavioral health services to just expand
on the already infrastructure.
What kind of data is already available or being collected on the different grade levels of situations with substance use in particular? You know, we talked about, you said, well, you could start at the top and move your way back in terms of, you know, 12, 11, 10, 9. Middle school seems to be the really big sticking point right now. And I talked to law enforcement and educators as well. You know, would we, could we start in middle school, or does it have to be a moving backwards kind of thing?
So when I look at the curriculum, that again, BOTVN is just nationally, it is the strongest outcome measures that you could possibly find in it. It's actually quite startling, the stats that they say that the BOTVN can handle. Now, what we're looking at is, we could be cut what we can. You heard from citizens' comments. I'll start with here. We can't measure what we prevent.
Right.
We can't measure what we prevent. We do know that middle school seems to be where it is manifesting. Right. I think that DARE is a really strong presence in elementary schools, and it has that level of exposure, is what you're looking for at that age. In the middle school, is you're really talking about life skills, social skills, and how to make and parameter yourself around peer pressure. So when you look at just the resource fact of BOTVN, it says that this can cut alcohol use by 60%, it can cut marijuana use by 75%, methamphetamine by 68%, low risk for opioid and prescription drug abuse. So the outcome measures that are published, and I'm happy to share with any of you on all of the data and research that is used by that, it's pretty powerful. It is, the way you can go about it is, you could have three options on school education. You could start with option one, and that's that transition. That's 11th and 12th grade, really preparing that student to become an adult and what that experience is gonna look like. The second level would be offering it in either grade 9 or 10, which is just that high school kind of coming of age, peer pressure, social media, a big presence in social media there. But if you do that then, you have to offer the transition. And the intensity is that middle school. There's 30 sessions in middle school between, and they qualify middle school of grades 6 to 8. And the idea of being aware of your social skills is the powerful piece in middle school, and the awareness of substance abuse and healthy relationships.
Is there a gap with the middle school now and sort of this sort of intensely manifested situation in the middle school grades because during COVID there was a lack of DARE?
So I'm not
for those kids who are now in middle school.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure if it is because of the lack of DARE. I don't know how to answer that, Supervisor. I know that there is a lot of concern with the school, and they had said because there were a year or so where kids were not socialized in school and in that school setting to learn and to cope, to socialize, to understand peer pressure, to manage a schedule. That certainly seems to have been the big one, to manage the schedule. The transition, the start of the day, the end of the day, is really problematic for schools.
Do these programs specifically address vaping?
There is curriculum at every level for tobacco, to cut tobacco use. I have not seen, and what I have been looking is specific for vaping. It is identified as tobacco use.
And it's not just tobacco.
It's not just tobacco. So I could look certainly and
I'd like more information when you have time.
Yeah, certainly about what that,
thank you,
that
Mr.
would
Chair.
Look like.
Thank you.
Supervisor Stocker.
You gave some really nice statistics that we can do that well. What's the average?
The average, I'm sorry, Supervisor, of prevention?
Of success. You were giving us, you know, 68%, 70%.
I don't know the average of successful prevention. I do not, there is no prevention education being currently taught in our middle schools and high schools surrounding substance
abuse. Is there in other schools? Where did these percentages come from that you were presenting?
Give me a moment.
I just assumed that they were data gathered and therefore there was be an average somewhere.
So the facts that I'm referencing is coming out of the archives of pediatric and adolescent medicine. And certainly I could research more to tell you the average, but I don't know that offhand.
Okay, I'd like to know.
Yeah.
Because we might be average, we might be above average, but I'd like to see where, you know, we're likely, you know, closer to be.
Well, the only formalized prevention right now for this would be DARE, that we could pull locally, would be from DARE supervisor. So that would be, certainly that's just happening in some schools in elementary level.
Okay.
And so we wouldn't have a comparable for our community for the middle school and high school.
Okay.
So our statistics will look really bad.
Well, that's what I'm like, here we are instituting a program, or possibly, and we're given these statistics of we can do this based on what? That's, I guess I just don't understand how we got to those numbers, and I'd like to know that.
Right, so we've got to those numbers by just looking at the curriculum, and it's called BotVin. Okay. And it's the curriculum that is widely used internationally, actually, and mostly adopted.
Are there national figures that they're drawing from?
And that's exactly what I was referencing. Those were the national figures.
So what's the national average rather than the best? That's what I'm trying to get to.
That's an excellent question. I
think we finally got to the actual thing I was asking. So, perfect.
Any other supervisors? Supervisor Gerson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to the John Jansen. So we requested a series of things at a couple earlier meetings, and one of them was an update on our opioid funds. That was one of the items I remember talking about. So. Could we put that on a future agenda? Do you remember talking in a previous committee meeting a list of items that we wanted to address, an update on the opioid fund being one of them?
The settlement dollars,
right. So this is funded with the settlement
dollars. This would be the first thing funded out of that.
Right. So when you put that on the agenda, I would like to include in the discussion how other agencies apply for some of that money or what the process might be so that they would be aware of it. One other comment I would make, we have about half an hour, but I started out at the 5142 board and I was there when we had Weybridge Manor and Meridian House and Alcohol and Other Drug Council, which evolved into the Hope Council, and their partners that are critically important part of our community, and I would like them to at least be made aware of how, you know, if there's any help that these dollars could provide in those initiatives.
Sure.
And with that, I yield. So.
Yes, Supervisor Getz.
Real quickly, my brother-in-law is a truant officer at one of the high schools. Now this, you know, I don't know statistics or anything, but I've heard that our truancy problem goes very low, all the way into the elementary schools, and it's huge. Now, how that ties into this, I don't know, but I think education of this kind of stuff should start as early as possible. And I don't think waiting until, you know, you're getting ready to go through life when, I mean, there's carjackings by 12 and 13-year-olds in Milwaukee, I hear on the radio. I mean, we need to drill down at the lowest possible level. So what I'd like to see after we hire somebody is, I know you quoted a program that's going to be followed here, but I'd like to see an implementation plan of how this is going to be laid out once we get that person in. So something I'd like to see down the road.
I would say, Supervisor, we are very anxious to get going on that and to systemize what this process is going to look like. Absolutely.
And I'd like to see that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Beshaw.
Thank you, Chair. Couple of questions. The county expends millions of dollars on an annualized basis for myriad programs that are all interventional of some form. It's a layer cake. Where is this in the layer cake?
Well, Supervisor, could you help me understand a little bit more about the...
You referenced there. We have Hope here. We have a lot of programs that the county expends resources for to create interventions, to keep kids out of drugs, out of crime, out of whatever pathways, and there are many pathways to be pulled to. But where does this fit in that layer cake of all the different interventional activities that we have?
So when we look at intervention or when or look at services supervisor, I would really always categorize any of the services in behavioral health we would do as prevention, intervention, treatment, or recovery, right? So we really have four categories of what kind of services we want to provide. When we look at operationalizing county government, it would be a good train of thought is if you spend $100 million on prevention, hopefully you're not going to have to spend a lot of money in treatment and recovery, right? You're putting a lot of effort into education and prevention. This solely sits in that front level of prevention. This is living in that arena of prevention. And like you had heard in citizens' comments, we do not have a lot of opportunity to capture new money for prevention. And so when we had the opioid settlement panel, which I'm a part of, we talk a lot about what does this community already have access to, either through county government or through contracts. And prevention was the one piece that we have the least amount of. And so when we're tasked with that idea to spend money to save lives, we want to capitalize on that. We want to say, where are we not going to find these funds in the future? Or where are we least likely able to find these opportunities in the future? And prevention is absolutely, was the first out of everyone's need.
How many prevention programs do we currently operate?
Well, let me jump in here a little bit. I think the question that you're getting at is, like, how do we fit in the school system? So There are not, besides DARE, there aren't any substance use or abuse programs within the school system that are operated by the county. There are mental health services that are provided via therapists and those type of things, which could include substance use counseling. However, there is no systemized program that is going to touch every single student that the program is meant or will intervene with. That does not exist, whether it's KUSD or if you're talking about the county schools. So this would be a new program that would not have been in the school systems before. The BOTFIN that Carrie is referencing is a program that has been utilized across the United States as well as internationally to show this data. It's been utilized in different forms in different places. However, it's one of the most successful because I think people have recognized that we have to start prevention younger. I mean, it's hard to do prevention when somebody's already been exposed or is already using. Now you're really at that treatment point. So getting ahead of the game is where we're looking at the literature coming out and where the new grants and programs are coming out is looking at these school-age children and trying to get the conversation started with them about how you can say no.
So new program, is it pressure tested? Which schools have you talked to? What's the receptivity?
Sir, so certainly we have Wilmot High School is ready to go last year. So as soon as we say we're there, we're ready, we're in there. Currently the superintendent, Dr. Plowerd of Wilmot, is eager to have his feeder schools engage in this as well. Certainly everyone's waiting to hear if we have a position and if we're able to get going and what and really bringing our partners to the table when deciding the curriculum. We don't want to make a unilateral decision that we believe that this is the best curriculum. We really need to figure out what that need is. And so currently we have a strong commitment from Wilmot and the feeder schools of Wilmot. Central is eager to find out when that's going to start at Wilmot because they really want to have that conversation. I know that currently KUSD, there are three schools that are accessing the DARE program, and there's need. There is high need.
I understand there's need, but I understand that they have not, on approach from the Sheriff's Department, they have not said yes.
I'm sorry, was that?
Many schools have not said yes to the DARE program.
Right.
The Sheriff's Department would like to do more, but the schools don't want to.
Right. And we have found that in the KUSD system, it tends to be school-based, so individual schools instead of the whole system. The some of the community service officers that we have reported to our panel have gotten, yes, we would love to see this. We have not asked for commitments until we actually have the program in place, because we don't want to promise something that we can't deliver. But there have been a multitude of different schools that have said, absolutely, yes, we would be interested in this. Now, do we have strong commitments? No. But do we have them wanting to put this into some of the schools? Absolutely.
But there is receptivity.
Correct. Absolutely.
Take me through the ramp up. How long does it take to hire, to materially prepare, to launch, and then when do we begin executing? Is it this fall school semester coming? Or?
That is the plan, Supervisor, is to be able to offer these services this fall. So as we go through committee, as we go to full board, we would hope to have this posted relatively soon. And hired soon, that would be the goal. And what we know about this, and again, I'm really using this really high level standard material of BOTVN, that there is online courses, so we wouldn't necessarily have to send our new hire off to a training course or to a curriculum. Can all be done virtually, and then with the supporting materials, so that can be that can happen relatively quickly.
So the person is an Army of One. What collateral resources are there?
The commitment so far from the from Wilmot is health and coaching staff and administration.
And part of the rationale for embedding it into the behavioral health unit is to have the support of the behavioral health outreach coordinator, who also does prevention work to the global community, as well as the behavioral health manager, as well as our treatment court coordinator and some of the other folks that already have a lot of community connections and already have connections within the school system, so that we can implement things fast.
Thank you.
I would like to make a comment, sure. If I could pass to you real quick. So this is being funded by the opioid settlements.
Yes.
So how long do we have these funds for?
Well, we have the funds with the settlement. Not every single settlement runs the same course. So some funds are coming in at a 5-year schedule, some at 9, some at 19. We also know that those are the finalized from the pharmaceutical companies. Now the pharmacies have settled their suits as well, and we believe that to be about 2/3 of the pharmaceutical. So we currently have $1.75 million available. We do have to wait to see how the rest of the payments come in. And so it would be a guess at this point of we could get another $100,000 in annually, up to $500,000 in annually. It depends on how the payments of now the pharmacies pay out. There was that last minute surprise with the pharmaceutical settlement that J&J gave us 5 years up front. And that's how we ended up with 1.75 right out of the gates. So it is really going to be hard to tell, Chairman, what the actual dollar amounts coming in are going to look like definitively, because we're beholden to the lawsuit and the settlement dollars. But we have the 1.75 now, and knowing that it will be added to every year for at least 19 years. The hope of this position also is to not rely solely on the settlement dollars. The hope is to constantly looking for that opportunity for another SAMHSA grant or another grant that would come through, that we could look at expansion and look at sustainability.
Okay. What is the, I'm a little hesitant to adding a position. What is the job description? What is this person doing? What are they not doing? I see what's in the resolution, but is there something specific that, you know, we need something measurable that we can say this person is doing their job, this person is, you know, is doing what they're supposed to be doing? What metrics do we have to measure, you know, their what we're basically paying them to do with these funds?
Well, the metric certainly would be to get the original whatever curriculum we decide. The metric would be to get that launched in the school. The metric of the scope would be to gather baseline data. So certainly we would need a lot of effort with the school that we're working with, and I know initially Wilmot is willing to share as much data as they have at their disposal about kids that are using on school premises, students that are coming in altered, students that are found with contraband or dealing on school, and Supervisor Gentz, the truancy rates. There's a lot of students there having unhealthy relationships and partner violence. So we would definitely want to find that baseline data with the school that we start with. And then certainly we have to measure what that looks like throughout the year and the years to come. Prevention, once again, it's almost impossible to measure what doesn't happen. But you have to start with baseline data. And that's what makes everyone accountable, right? We have to be accountable of the services that we're providing. I'm also hoping that the natural, that working with our private sector, there is a lot of business and the outreach that we already do through behavioral health, and I know, Chairman, you've been on some of that outreach with us, that their community, our business community, is eager to support what we're doing. And I think that this is a perfect opportunity for the outreach specialists to start building relationships with private sector, and again, in hopes to for system sustainability.
I'm still, you know, I still, the stuff that's measurable, no, you can't measure prevention, but what you can measure is how many schools are we in, how many students have we taught, how many contacts have we made. So far, I'm only hearing one school that's willing to work with us, and I get, you got to start somewhere.
Right.
But if DARE is already not being accepted by other schools, what would make them?
DARE is not accepted in all of the Kenosha Unified schools. DARE, as far as I know, is in almost every school west of the interstate and St. Joe's Academy. They are in three KUSD schools. They do not have, the Sheriff's Department doesn't have a contract with KUSD. There are three schools that have come and said, please work with us even without this contract. So the schools that are reluctant are schools that don't even have a contract. And even that set has gone outside and said, please work with us. So there's been a lot of conversation, certainly with our schools, but to be able to commit and say we can do something without the position, We have to be mindful of not overcommitting and then we can't deliver, right? These schools are desperate for our help and they're eager to have any support they can have. I would feel negligent in asking someone to commit without knowing that we have anything to offer. And so this really needs to be that first step so we can say, here we go. We are ready to start building what this fall curriculum needs to look like. We have a commitment from the county that we can provide this service. I'm really hopeful that this is going to materialize. Just with the commitment with the SROs and the administration, the constant outreach of where is it at? How is it going? The settlement panel that is largely made up of chiefs of police that supply the SROs to all of the schools ask every month, where are we at with this position? Our schools need support and need help. So where we don't have that formal commitment, Chairman, I do know that there is a constant interest and that ask of when are you ready? When can we sit down and talk?
I also think starting out with just Wilmot is actually good for this program because it hasn't been implemented before. So starting small, we can actually get our metrics in place. We can get our baseline data. We can see how the kids respond, how the parents respond before we grow it. You know, work the bugs out, so to speak. My hope is that, and I believe it will happen, is that once it's implemented in one district and it's successful, the other ones are going to want to be a part of it because it's just something you can offer for a lot of the problems that they're seeing in the schools that they don't have a resolution for. So it's just providing that next, okay, now we have something else that we can work on some of these kids. A lot of these kids might not be using themselves, but they're exposed to it in the home. So providing those kids that before they get into trouble and they start using themselves is kind of the goal of a lot of these programs.
Okay. Yeah, questions I still have, just, you know, I'll yield in a second here, but just, you know, is this the best use of the money? I'm hesitant to create a full-time position for something, you know, that we're still trying to figure out the job description. Obviously, we have other community partners that are doing this already, and I'm not sure if that would be a better use of that.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, okay.
We do absolutely have a job description.
That would be great.
with the draft? Yeah.
Okay, well, I will yield for now. I'll glance through this. I believe Supervisor Nunez wants to do it.
What is the cost of the BotVin curriculum? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So again, we talk about the three different levels of curriculum: middle school, early high school, late high school. The middle school training for the specialist would be $645. It is then $250 to train for the high school and then the transition, right? So we're looking at under $1,000 just to get
to get that one person trained.
Right, exactly.
And then there's the idea to take that individual, this person in the job description, and deploy them in a school and train the other staff there. Sort of a coaching model, is that what we're talking about?
That we really want to make sure that we can customize. Each school and school district is going to have a different need. Do they have staff that can sustain this? Do they have staff that can actually put this information in front of their students?
Right.
And the answer for some schools will be, yeah, they do. And the answer will be no for some other schools. And so we really need that this individual, this specialist, to be nimble and flexible, to be able to step in and provide the actual education delivery of that piece, or to support the other educators that already exists. So it would really to build that culture around education and to monitor the fidelity and the sustainability.
Absolutely.
Because everything is great when it first comes and it's launched. The Substance Abuse Coalition purchased BotVin for a few KUSD schools and I think a county school several years ago. It was used for 1 year. Staff turned over and it was never used again. And so just purchasing curriculum is already not worked in the past. That there really needs to be someone there to training and to monitor fidelity. And like the chairman had asked, what are the outcomes then? How many students have been reached? How many classes have been conducted? And what are the outcomes of that? And what, comparatively to the baseline data from the day we went in, to what, you know, where are we at with the same amount of guides, use in school, showing up under the influence, transaction and paraphernalia, and delinquency, and truancies.
So when I first came to the county board and to this committee, I immediately brought a concern to the committee about substance abuse education in schools. My sons are in high school. One just graduated last weekend, one's going to be a senior, but you know, they're experiencing this in real time. And you know, full disclosure, there is maybe a little bit in health class, and half the kids are taking health online right now, like, hey, don't use drugs, they're bad. I had said at the start of the term, it will take until one of their friends drops dead or ODs in front of them for them to wake up, because they don't have the education. And there are between 20 and 75 citations issued a day in all of our major high schools in the city, for particularly for vaping or vaping THC or having paraphernalia or for dealing or whatever, and that's just what they catch. It is a huge problem, and this is the big component that's missing. There was an OD at Indian Trail that happened right in front of them, and if there hadn't been Narcan on the premises, that child probably would have died. My concern is that one person is not enough. I certainly would like it to be one per school, if we could ever do that someday, and maybe that's a goal that we work toward. But I agree with you that having a pilot school sort of to start out, and that school in particular has some very special needs with the indication of the abuse of relationships among the students and within the families. I met with every single district administrator, principal, and vice principal for the schools west of the I, as well as KUSD, over the last several months, and this has been a concern that they have all had. You know, we need drug prevention education. We need it bad. I don't know what the hesitancy and commitment is on this particular program, or who it's been piloted to or talked to or pitched to, but I can assure you that there is buy-in if they can get the resources. I just don't think that this is going to be anywhere close to enough, but it's, we got to start somewhere. So you absolutely have my support on this.
Mr. Chairman, I would move approval.
Second.
All right, are there any other comments?
I just wanted to agree with what Supervisor Nedvesky said. In the past couple of years, I've noticed like a lot more vaping and drug use within my school.
Good, excellent. Supervisor.
I had a question. How do students come to participate in this program?
Well, I would certainly hope that this would be, it's prevention. I would certainly hope that this is something that's available to the student body. My experience at our county school that we did a lot of outreach to because of a lot of the concerns and struggles they had this fall was that the administration identified 100 students that had a lot of challenges this fall. Prevention in this curriculum, this is education. Just like you wouldn't limit the chemistry class to a certain amount of children, this, I really believe, is prevention, and in its truest form, it's offered to everyone.
Okay.
And Supervisor Stocker, in the conversations with Wilmot High School, they had indicated that they would implement it into their health classes that every ninth grader would be enrolled in, so it would be available to that whole.
So this isn't specific to those 100 students that are having problems?
No, sir. This is everyone.
Okay. Yeah, it's part of it. And their health teachers would be teaching it as part of the curriculum.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, I would just like to say, I would hope that they would be able to get those reports and hear back. I think the committee should be able to check in and just see what numbers we're getting from this, how many students are we, so that we can reassess it, because we're talking about adding on another person to our payroll. We want to make sure that we're measuring that and we're checking in and making sure that this is actually making an impact and this is the best use of the grant money that we're getting. I think it should be reviewed by this committee. I think we should be looking at this and making sure that there are measurables that we can identify and that we can look at. Whether it's the number of students taught, the number of schools that are actually using this program, and if it's after a year it's just one or two schools, then we need to reassess that and make sure that we're making the best use of the money that, it sounds like there will be more money coming as the settlements continued, and making sure that we're making the best use of these funds. So, Supervisor Gentz.
Yeah, I can't think of a better way. I mean, we're going to hear, I'm going to probably make a motion to move the opioid thing till next meeting, because I don't think we're going to have enough time to digest that. But that being said, I mean, we're talking about here's the end use problem we have, and this is the way to go at the beginning of the use problem. So this is a no-brainer to me. And I don't like creating new positions, and I don't like spending money at being on finance all my years on the county board. I question all money. But when you're going to spend it on children and working on a problem that we have to have a whole presentation on later, that's money well spent. So I will fully support this, and I'm sure that we'll get measurables along the way. As I ask for a plan, we will ask for, what kind of metrics you're creating and how many schools, and grow it to help our youth understand what happens if they keep using this stuff, so that we don't have to look at suicide and opioid deaths and mental health problems and all kinds of crap down the road. So that's my take on it.
And thank you for the job description. That was very informative. That was very helpful. Is there a motion?
Yes.
Okay. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Youth and governance, how do you vote?
Aye.
All right. Resolution passes. We have 5 minutes till our board meeting. Do we have a motion to...
I would move to defer this opioid presentation until our next meeting, because we can't digest
that. Second. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Supervisor Gooseman. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Youth and governance?
Aye.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, if I could.
Oh.
Maybe we could discuss the settlement dollars also at the next meeting, if that's okay with the chair, combined with this.
Just put opioid first, since they had to wait.
So, yeah, and then date for the next meeting, since it's July 4th.
Oh, yes. Supervisors, committee members, please. Our next county board meeting is going to be on July. Next Human Services Committee was scheduled to be on July 4th. Our county board meeting will be on July 5th. Yeah. Are we good with meeting here at 6 p.m. on July 5th. Does that work for Wednesday, July 5th, human services meeting before the county board meeting? Will that work for everybody?
I'm wondering if we need extra time so we get through everything, if you're going to ask for a second item on the agenda along with the opioid presentation.
I would, yeah, we would have to review the agenda.
I'm okay with putting it on
a future agenda.
Yeah. A future agenda.
Yeah, we'll see what all is on the agenda. What is all the agenda? But does that work for all the supervisors for the committee?
Yes.
July 5th at 6 p.m.?
I actually had it on my calendar for the 5th.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, is there any other business as authorized by law?
No.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Please sign the resolution.
Please sign the resolution before you leave.
Youth and governance, do you want to leave?
Oh, I don't know. The county board meeting.
No, I mean here.
She's oh, we do have to.
You got to respond.
Yeah. Yeah.
I gotta sign the resolution.
Yeah, I gotta do it.
Everybody has to sign the resolution, please.
So
it's on the minutes.
There was a
through my pen.
No one has gone to Winnipeg.
So bring them up here.
So Carrie's got some figures as far as cost saving, but so far it's
different.
Level of the manager, the 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 level of the manager, the